I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're going to talk about President Barack Obama's speech last night, what you thought of it, what he's saying to the nation, what the response was, what catcalls from the audience mean from Republican congressman from South Carolina, and more. The number here is 410-319-8888 to join in on this conversation. But first, let me remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas. This month, Urbanite goes back to school with a learning issue, featuring reports on the future of high-stakes testing, new approaches to the dropout crisis, and challenges facing teaching behind bars. Urbanite is available at over 750 locations. But Bob Stormby, who's editor of the Daily Howler, today is only available here on the Mark Steiner Show or on the web at the Daily Howler.
I'm there.
And you're there. 410-319-8888. So we have a clip that you talked about in the Daily Howler today.
All right.
We're about to play.
All right.
Can we roll that, Judith, and hear that, and Brian, let's hear that clip.
Add it all up. And the plan I'm proposing will cost around $900 billion over 10 years. Less than we have spent on the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. And less than the tax cuts for the wealthiest few Americans that Congress passed at the beginning of the previous administration. Of these costs will be paid for with money already being spent, but spent badly in the existing healthcare system. The plan will not add to our deficit. The middle class will realize greater security, not higher taxes. And if we are able to slow the growth of healthcare costs by just 0.1% each year, 0.1%, it will actually reduce the deficit by $4 trillion over the long term. Now, this is the plan I'm proposing. It's a plan that incorporates ideas from many of the people in this room tonight, Democrats and Republicans. And I will continue to seek common ground in the weeks ahead.
So, now, you had a very different take on that.
You're starting me off with the negative part of this address. I thought there were a couple things you did that were extremely positive, but I thought that this part we just played is striking, because there he's talking about the kinds of savings in health spending. It's not clear whether he's talking about savings to the government or savings to the overall health spending. I think he means overall health spending. He's calling for saving 0.1% a year on our growth rate in health spending. I just think that's stunning, because if you look at the amount of money this country spends on health, it just dwarfs the amount of money that is being spent in every other developed nation in the world, just 2 to 3 times what Great Britain, Japan, Spain, Italy, France are spending. There's tremendous extra spending in there. I don't know where it's going. You hear accounts of where it's going, but I have used the word looting because I think it's obvious. I think anyone who understands numbers, when you look at those numbers, there is gigantic looting going on in our health system. I think otherwise it's known as profit. And when we're calling for taking 0.1% off the growth each year, that's just a stunning acceptance of what I call today a corporate democracy, where I think both parties have agreed, basically, the kid stays in the picture, the profit stays in the system, wherever all that money is going. And, you know, Obama, I believe, as a candidate, was talking about saving, you know, lowering the cost of premiums by $2,500 a year, which, by the way, when you look at what we're spending compared to what every other developed nation is spending, there's tremendous money in there going somewhere. I don't know where, and the newspapers have done a very poor job of explaining it.
Well, they have. I mean, probably the best explanation of that I've seen is by Dr. Arnold Relman, the former editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine and also retired professor at the Harvard Medical School, where he pointed out, I interviewed him last week, mm-hmm. and he was pointing out that $700 to $800 billion that is used for the profit in hospitals or for insurance companies' profits can be used, should remain in the system, but can be used differently to, in the long run, bring down costs by putting it into medical care. I mean,
I'm going to say to you, I don't know. I don't know, and I don't know because I read the newspapers. You know, I mean, to be honest, and that's. But it's stunning to me that we're talking about such tiny savings when we're spending 2 to 3 times what highly successful health systems are spending in other nations.
Well, let's explore what else happens in this speech. I'm curious about listeners.
Per person.
Per
person. It's incredible.
I mean, it is. And I think that was not addressed by President Barack Obama last night, nor is it addressed by most of the things that we've...
And it isn't addressed by the Democratic Party. Let's be very clear. Both parties have signed off on this. It's not... Obama mentions it in... Democrats mention it in the passing. Republicans never mention it. Neither party discusses what these remarkable data mean.
We'll talk a bit about also what Paul Begala wrote today, who loved the speech, and we'll talk about that. And I want to see what you think about the speech at 410-319-8888, what you said about the specifics of what President Barack Obama said, about the reaction from the Republican Party, about what you think might have been left out of that speech, and do you think he's selling the American people or Congress on passing this health care reform, and what would it mean to pass it? What are we passing actually here? 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to Facebook and throw your comments up there, and we will read them on the air. And Coco in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi, Coco.
Hi. I don't want to talk too much about the facts and the figures. I thought he kind of laid that out. What I want to talk about is how clear he laid whatever he was laying out, and how disrespectful the Republicans and the audience were towards the president. I think it's kind of like a leftover from the boycotting of his address to the students. There seems to be a genuine disdain for the duly elected leader of the free world as it relates to the protocol and the decorum that has been shown to such despots as George Bush, even when he was clearly lying about the weapons of mass destruction and other kinds of ideas. No one called out, "You are a lie," or you lie. And I just think that Nancy Pelosi should have taken the gavel and hit the desk or done something to say that type of behavior would not be allowed in that particular forum. And I just think that as a leader, he's emotionally healthy, clear, and sincere. And he set the tone that this is a moral and humane proposal to include those people who are left out of the conversation in this democracy. And I think anyone who had a problem with it is inhumane and amoral. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Well, I didn't think it was gigantically different from the norm, except for the one congressman yelling out, "You lie," which was very different from the norm, very weird, and a tremendous, tremendous political gift to President Obama. I mean, it really creates that, plus the school thing, you know, the boycotting of the speech of the students. I really think right now, and, you know, and these things come and go, right now it's created a sense, it seems to me, as the craziness of August turns into the more coolly reasoned work of September, people are going, boy, there's something very strange about this opposition. You know, I think that was the worst thing. That was a political gift to President Obama. It was a very stupid thing to do. It was unprecedented. Other than that, I didn't think the evening was much different from the norm.
I mean, I think that what is odd is people picking up, whether it's Senator Grassley and others picking up, a Republican senator, who is usually a pretty staid fellow, picking up the LaRouche crazy's idea that there are going to be death panels.
Incredible.
It's credible.
It really is incredible, yeah.
I mean, that just blows my mind. I can see the crazies and Glenn Beck and the rest doing it on Fox 45 and all the other places they do it, Fox News, I mean to say. But for moderate Republican congressmen, moderately conservative Republican congressmen,
right,
to pick this up and talk about it as gospel and truth.
I'll tell you, Senator Grassley is up for re-election, and there's so much of this crazy stuff coming from talk radio, talk television, and think tank leadership the conservative base in that party is believes, you know, they believe these things. It's partly the fault of Democrats. Last night, the thing that Obama did that was great, I've never seen a major Democrat say, I think he could have said it better, tell people you are being misled. People are telling you things that just aren't true. Democrats never stoop to tell voters that. We have sat around for 20 years and let them make up murder lists about President Clinton, invent all those crazy lies that Al Gore never said, that ran through all that BS about Kerry. The Democratic Party has sat there and taken it for 20 years. And last night, the Democratic president said, told people, I think he could have done it better. But it's a start. He said, you are being told things that aren't true. But people in Iowa don't know that. The people who vote in Republican primaries don't know that. And Chuck Grassley, you know, it's like the three faces of Chuck now. He plays the same guy in D.C. and goes out to Iowa and behaves like the fool. But those are the voters, and they're being instructed by Glenn Beck and others like that. They believe all that stuff. They don't know it's all phony. They don't know. And the Democratic Party makes very little attempt to tell them. It's just shocking. And to me, that means I have long since stop thinking the Democratic Party really is trying to win. They aren't trying to win. They stopped trying to win. You don't let your leaders be lied about the way we do with Clinton and Gore and Obama. You just don't let that go on without making some attempt. And they don't make an attempt. By any normal standard, they don't care. Now, I thought it was very good that Obama did that and that he started developing a narrative at the end about why we need a progressive government to regulate the interests. You know, that's part of American history. The Democratic Party has also been too lazy to talk about that for 20 years. We don't talk about it.
I heard a former Republican congressman say that a lot of Democrats are being quiet and running scared because polls in their districts saying that they are having...
Yes, their voters believe it, too. There are quite a few Democratic... to elect a Congress with the kind of majorities Democrats have, you have right now, you have to elect people from red districts. There's a lot of senators from red states. It's a miracle that the Democrats have 60 senators. Because the logic of the Senate tilts red. All the little states are, anyway, you know what I'm saying.
Which is why Puerto Rico and Virgin Islands and Guam should be states. 410-319-8888. Bob Zimmerman, the editor of the Daily Howler, is here. We'll talk about that one day. Nathan in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Hi, Nathan.
There was a question that came out regarding where is the cost coming from and where is that money going?
Mm-hmm.
A large portion of that money is going to the administration by private insurance companies in trying to process claims and the money that they take right off the top. Another part of that money is the technology that's used in this country that many other countries do not have and the research that goes into providing drugs that are extremely expensive. And they do a very limited job on making the overall health care of the general population any better. It's great for one little specific nebulous type of procedure or some kind of illness, but it doesn't serve the purpose of the general public, which is the principles of public health as a rule, that it is what is better for the greater than for the individual. You know, premature births and things like that and raising these kids in many countries and in undeveloped countries, those children would just die. In this country, they're put in incubators 4 or 5 months. They're given medications to allow them to breathe.
You think they shouldn't?
Beg your pardon?
You think they shouldn't?
Well, I think that what you have to do is you do have to look at what is in the greater interest of the overall population, and do we spend $5,000 on a vial of medication to keep one premature baby alive when that $5,000 could take care of 50 people?
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, but let's hear what listeners think about that too, Nathan. 410-319-8888. We'll get to the other callers, but what you're just saying, I think there, and I want to hear what Bob's take on this is too. I mean, I think that you've got there clearly is. A huge amount of money into the hundreds and hundreds of millions, maybe billions, that come out of the profits of insurance industry. There's also the marketing of hospitals because nonprofit hospitals are now competing against for-profit hospital chains and everybody's going after the dollar that comes in. There's doctors going for fee service as opposed to a set salary that they could do if there were doctors cooperatives around the country, which some people like Dr. Arnold Relman are suggesting we go to as a way of doing medicine in America. But I think that we'd have a better shot at talking about those kind of cost savings and where machinery should be that people need for diagnostic issues rather than always putting people there and having every hospital have one. But to tell a mother and father that your child born prematurely should not have every chance to live is a tough sell. And I'm not sure I would agree with that either, actually.
Well, I would agree that it's a tough sell.
No,
you look at an H1N1 situation and who's going to get the vaccine and who is not. The reality is that everyone cannot be saved.
But the reality is that but if you're a doctor and you take a Hippocratic oath, your job is to administer care and save people from death.
But as we started out talking, it's about private insurance companies
right.
who restrict care from the beginning. It's not about the provider. It's about the insurance companies and the restrictions that they place to take in the money on the top to administer these plans. And when it goes to the medication aspects, you mentioned advertising. Think about the advertising cost that is being used right now by pharmaceutical companies to advertise for medication for a patient to come in and demand from a practitioner.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of people who would argue that should not be allowed. They should not be selling.
That's a lot of money spent on television advertising.
Right.
That could be certainly better spent.
Bob Summerbee.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Nathan.
There's about a half dozen basic areas where people say this is where the money is going, the extra money, the excessive spending. The caller mentioned some, you know, the insurance companies, just the amazing amount of paper pushing that goes on, the advertising costs, certain aspects of pharmaceutical payments. I will say this. I don't think there's any particular indication that all that extra spending we do is going toward heroic life-saving procedures. If you take countries like France, which spends half what we do per person, they're ranked as the top health system in the world, or Japan, which spends a third what we spend per person, they get the same health outcomes we get. It's not like we're heroically saving people and creating tremendous health outcomes with that extra money. That is not where our extra money is going. I've never seen any indication that sort of thing explains why we're spending two and three times what other advanced nations are spending, advanced nations that get the same outcomes we do.
Seth, thanks so much for your call. Nathan was very thoughtful. 410-319-8888. Sam in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you doing today?
Well, Sam, thank you.
Great. I'm going to be very brief.
Okay.
The only thing that I want to say was, one, that I, being a former South Carolinian, I was very embarrassed by the congressman last night for his statement to the president. Not that it was directed to him individually, but it was disrespectful to the office, period. Second point of it is, as far as the healthcare part of it is concerned, I had an insurance policy, and one of the things that they adjusted on me was that not only for the period of time that I had the policy, it gradually went up. And at a period of time, at a 3-month, they started giving me a prescription plan that for a 3-month period of time, I started getting the same amount of medication for the same parts that I was getting, for the medication that I was getting. But they went up on the price, and then over a 3-month period of time, it was the same medication but a higher price. So I agree with what the president was saying last night. And I guess that's the third part of my statement was I don't understand why people do not understand what he was saying, because I'm very clear about it. And I hope this is not a negative word, but across the plan, it just seems like it's a point of racism, if I can say that. I already said it, so I apologize for saying
that. No, you don't have to apologize for saying that.
And it's just misleading to me. And it is misleading to a lot of people. And going back to my first statement, a person that will stand up in Congress and make a statement like that, then totally disrespect.
Bob Summerbee.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was a very odd thing for the congressman to do. Because what it suggests is these people really, they're not just faking it. Somehow they actually feel it, and they're caught up in a level of partisan fury that leads them to do things that really are not working in their best interest. I will only say this about the Obama health plan. The same people who are making up the BS about the Obama health plan, let's start with Betsy McCoy, a little-known figure.
Who is?
Who's best known for having made up all kinds of BS about the Clinton health plan in 1994, and was really credited with defeating the Clinton health plan with a lot of plainly erroneous charges she made up. And now, 16 years later, she was the one who basically started the discussion that led to the death panels charge. So it's the same people from the same interests making up the same BS 16 years later. I mean, I don't see this. We discussed this the last time I was in here. I see this as being more similar to what happened the last time there was a Democratic president in terms of race. That last president was a white guy. They made it, the same people made up the same BS about his health plan. Literally the same people. It's stunning that Betsy McCoy is still around 16 years later to make up more credit, that the Democratic Party and the liberal world has not discredited her in a way, that she wasn't able just to go out and do this again. But this is, there's tremendous corporate power behind this. I can't explain it. But this goes on every time a Democrat suggests this sort of thing. It went on, the same thing happened 16 years ago with the Clinton health plan.
Well, I wonder who you think, before we go back to the phones at 410-319-8888, who President Obama was speaking to last night. I mean, you know, it was to the progressives, on the other hand, to the Republicans. I mean, it was going back and forth, but on some levels. But there's a lot of feedback you're hearing from people in the Congress. There are the two largest Democratic caucuses in Congress, the Blue Dogs and the progressives. Blue Dogs being the more conservative Democrats and progressives being more Democrats on the left. And the progressives are demanding meetings with President Obama. They are feeling pushed to the side, some people saying this. Who do you think President Obama was speaking to, and how do you think this plays out?
You know, I don't know who he was speaking to. It seemed to me, and he's given a lot of – unfortunately, he was only speaking to 21 million people, apparently, based on the ratings. And he's given a lot of speeches and press conferences. And so this, you know, it's kind of – it's apparently, from the audience standpoint, is getting old. Apparently, it was a fairly small audience last night compared to what had been hoped for. It seemed to me I didn't see a massive strategy. I saw him saying some things that his party should have been saying for decades. And it's kind of late in the game to be doing it. I think if the Republican Party is willing to go out there and play the fool now that everyone is back from the beach and is watching, I think that's going to help Obama. I think people may start to say, you know, maybe Obama actually is the sane one here, the way it seemed when we elected him. But I don't know exactly what strategy was being acted out last night.
As a person who watches the media and watches political response in the media, what does the 21 million mean to you? I mean, is it that is that, and how much fewer people are that than they would expect to listen to President Barack Obama?
Well, I think the numbers, I think even just with the primetime press conferences over the summer, the first one was quite a bit larger than the second one. What it says to me is people have watched it. I mean, you know, a lot of people watched the first primetime press conference and fewer people watched the second one. And apparently, this is a number I just heard on cable this afternoon. Apparently the audience wasn't what it might have been last night. I was stunned last week when I heard he was going to make another speech. I thought, my God. I thought, will anyone in the Congress even go? I mean, we've sat through so many presentations. To be honest, they didn't do a very good job defining what this thing was all about in the beginning. You know, when you're saying eight things about a plan, you're sort of not saying anything in terms of mass communication. And I don't think they did a very good job from the beginning of really defining what are we doing here? Why are we doing this plan? And I think people start tuning out. It's sort of a natural process.
So what do you all think about President Obama's speech last night? What did it say to you? What do you think it said to this whole healthcare debate? 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to the Steiner Facebook page and make your comments heard there as well. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can join us and let us go back to the phones and see who's up next. Mike. Mike, you've been holding on. You're on next.
Good evening, gentlemen. I would like to talk about the speech And I don't want to offend our president, but I do want to say that to talk about the health care system and say we have to preserve the position of the insurance companies and their profits is a politically cowardly act. It is cowardly. A single-payer system doesn't require insurance companies. It's a waste of the public treasury, and there are 47 million people with no insurance at all, and we need a better system, and we did not get leadership to fight for it. And people better look inside themselves. How are we going to make a fight that's got to be made? Because people are dying behind this system, and President Obama's plan, all you could say about it, well, at least it's not the Republican plan. I'll give him that, and he's not John McCain. That's why a lot of people voted for him. But we need something better, and we have to fight for it. I don't know how to do it, but I'm interested in hearing, you know, people's thoughts about it.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, I tend to agree, although I wouldn't I would not blame Obama. You know, you can't ask someone to get elected president and then suddenly, after two decades of lethargy, miraculously recreate the political system so to a point where single payer becomes politically doable. I don't think politically a single payer would be politically doable, in part because the Democratic Party has been asleep for decades. There's been no attempt to develop the kinds of understandings in the public that would allow that kind of a system to be argued for successfully. So is Obama caving in to interests, or is he just making a rational decision? I don't know. I'm not inside his mind, but I don't blame him. The other side has been pounding away with their big government never did anything right every day for decades. It's in every voter's head. Many people believe it's not true. Big government does do some things right. They have a very aggressive message machine. The Democratic Party is just there. You know, we're number two. They try harder, basically, is the way it's been. And so you can't ask someone to come into office and miraculously snap his finger and invent political understanding in an electorate that just didn't exist the day he came into office. I just don't think it's rational. It's just...
We're looking at and talking about President Barack Obama's speech last night to the Congress and to the nation. Bob Sorenby, editor of the Daily Howler Online, is with us.
By the way, you can have a single-payer system and still pay way too much. So just single-payer alone doesn't guarantee that you won't be wasting money shoveling it away. Medicare is a single-payer system, and we spend way more on health care for our elderly than is spent in other countries where they get the same outcome. So, you know, you can still waste money in a single-payer system. That's not a magical cure for massive fraud and waste.
That's a really interesting point. That's a really interesting point.
Yeah.
I mean, that single-payer is a pass-through system. It's a way of paying for what we have.
You can still not massively waste money in that kind of system.
410-319-8888. Christy in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Well, Christy, welcome.
Good. Thank you. I wanted to talk about the healthcare system in general. Like it was just being said, we spend way too much money on our healthcare system with not so great results. I think we're like 32nd in the world or something like that. Here's an idea. I believe that as a whole, we need to study more psychosomatic disorders. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, I suffered from a psychosomatic disorder for 6 years and went to doctor after doctor, test after test. I had 3 needless surgeries, and I almost died from one of those surgeries, complication with the surgeries. And now I'm in school trying to study it, which there is no field for, so it makes it pretty hard. So I'm piecemealing my degree. Basically, for your listeners who are not familiar, it's real pain that causes real things, but the source is not the injury. The source is not your back pain. The source is not
right.
The migraine. It's not the fibromyalgia, the newest term on the block. It's caused by the stress in your life, by the way you deal with things. And it was actually studied in our medical profession in the early 20s, in the 1920s, and it died off the map. I think that, well, I have my own theory, but I haven't verified it yet with facts, so I'll leave that one alone.
Right,
but
so
I
what's,
think, My point is that's a way that not everybody, of course, because there are things that you need surgery for, you need doctors for, but if there was actually an outlet for patients to go and have problems solved without medication that costs billions of dollars and the side effects that come from that, without the surgeries that cost billions of dollars and the side effects that come from that, and still be cured, maybe that's a better scheme that we need to look at instead of just throwing money on top of money on top of money for not so good results. And I just wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
Focus on that. Well, no.
I have no expertise, but they can charge you a lot for that office visit, I'll tell you that.
They can, and I think that there are clearly psychosomatic illnesses are exist in it, and that they are a part of what ails us, and there's a lot to connect stress and other diseases that we have, and that's clear. I mean, I don't know if that's the really underlying cause of what's
No, it's not. I mean, that's not the underlying cause for the gigantic overspending.
Right. I think our overspending has more to do with the profit in the system, has more to do with how we pay physicians, has more to do with how we allocate what machines are going and how much we pay for pharmaceuticals. And that's not even being touched by President Barack Obama. He's walked away from that.
So it would seem, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of other issues here that I think that...
I mean, his strategy, and it may be the only strategy that would have worked, his strategy was to get the corporate interests to sign on to the plan this time. They all worked against the Clinton plan. Obama has them at the table. That may be something that in the long run is the best move you could have made. I can't judge that. But it means the interests are at the table. They're making little concessions, but that's it.
Very small concessions, yeah. I think. A caller, somebody wanted to ask you, I guess either one of us, but you, isn't Lyndon LaRouche a Democrat?
Well.
He's a crazy man.
No. He's a registered Democrat.
He's a registered, yeah.
But he's not a part of the Democratic Party, I think that's fair to say.
I think that he actually should be just registered.
Anyone can register any way they want.
He should. Maybe he should be registered in an institution. That might be better for Lyndon LaRouche. And if people keep calling him a leftist, he's neither left nor right. He's just out of his mind.
Right. Well.
And the people around him are, people around him. 410-319-8888. It's amazing how this cultish group has affected the debate. That the right wing conservatives have picked up this whole Nazi thing. There was a today, Valerie told me she went running and on a telephone poll, and she went around the neighborhood to look, see how many more around there. There was this picture of Obama in a clown suit saying, Obama socialist. I mean, there's like this.
Well, it's apparently always been like this, but 60 years ago, 80 years ago, you didn't have the kind of media we have today. You sort of had to be halfway sane to have a microphone in front of you at a certain point, except for small radio. There was always the Father Coughlins. Right. There was all the occasional. But sort of lunatic broadcasting has gone national in the last 25 years, and it has a tremendous effect. People do not understand they're being misled by these people. Average people don't know that, and no one's telling them. I don't see any liberal entities really trying to sit down with working class white population and say, you're sort of not being told the truth here. You really need to be more careful. I just don't see that happening. The liberal world has a sort of a sneering attitude toward the white working class at times, and I really wonder if it doesn't partly explain why the liberal world and the progressive world make so little attempt. In SDS days, it was going to the factories, work in the factories,
right.
Speak to the people who work in the factories. It's hard work.
It's hard work.
It's very sensible. It's a very sensible political strategy. We don't do that anymore. And people out there don't know when they put that they're hearing a lot of stuff that might not quite be accurate.
Here's a story, and I'm going to go right back to the phones. This is a story from those days. 1972, when McGovern was running for president. Lost badly, obviously, we all know, to President Nixon. We were community organizers in South Baltimore, which at that time was a mostly white, poor working class neighborhood. When we moved in there to organize tenant unions across racial lines, blah, blah, blah. Well, we organized for McGovern back then in 1972. We went door to door, and we turned what would have been George Wallace precincts into McGovern precincts the only two in the neighborhood, because what we did was go door to door, explain the issues, sit down and have meetings, conversations, and people said, huh? And they turned their vote around. That's what it takes.
Yeah, well.
Just like the president was a community organizer. That's what it takes. 410-319-8888. Robert, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to add a couple of comments in reference to the whole healthcare debate. I actually do medical collections for a living.
Okay.
And I speak to a lot of people across the country who, because of the exorbitant medical bills, and these are all different classes of people, different income structures. There's a lot of people who are just devastated by the cost of healthcare, the hospital stay, the procedure costs. You have maybe three or four different bills for one visit. So you multiply that by a couple of visits, and they're, they're filing bankruptcy. And the cost is exorbitant. It's kind of, another thing I also come across are the senior citizens who are on Medicare who are hit with these high, these deductibles and co-insurance balances, and these people are on SSI and they can barely live, and they pay their little $10 a month or $20 a month, and I mean it's really heartbreaking at times. I think this whole healthcare system, I would personally rather pay more taxes into a better healthcare system, more affordable healthcare system. I would probably, if the government can somehow subsidize new medical students coming out of college, paying off their loans as a TARP or some sort of program where they're able to provide affordable healthcare for the sake of why they actually became doctors and physicians to help people. It's kind of hard to equate, or we're in this capitalist society and we're for profit in terms of healing people.
Well, close to the end of the hour here, and I think that, I mean, there, one of the things that President Obama talked about was the public option last night as a way of paying for things, and kind of really made that a very narrow push as opposed to a large push.
It's gotten very narrow.
It's gotten really narrow.
There's going to be three people in it, I understand. It's going to be more like a clubhouse rather than a...
But what he said in the speech was, because there is no profit in it and no overhead, that it can afford through just the payments to the system to pay for people's health care. So I'm going, why don't you talk about a plan that maybe expands the idea of Medicare and Medicaid to pay for this? But you have to really begin to talk about the larger costs, which nobody's talking about. I mean,
well, it's just not the strategy they took. Now when John Edwards, who sort of took the lead in the Democratic primary on health care, their plans were all somewhat similar.
Right.
When he issued his plan, which went first, he explicitly said that the public option, and he was the one that introduced the concept,
right,
he explicitly said the public option might lead to single payer because so many people would move into the public option that over time, this would be a way of transiting from what we have now to single payer. That was explicit. That was the whole theory of the public option originally, starting in early 07. Now we all are supposed to act like this is some crazy idea that the Republicans thought up, that this would somehow, be threatening to the insurance companies. That was the explicit statement by the Edwards campaign the day they released it. So we've gone through a tremendous backpedaling from this, and it's because, I presume, it's because he wants to keep the insurance companies at the table. I don't know.
I mean, it's amazing to me that it's amazing to me how politicians like Edwards can have their human dalliances and destroy policy. I mean, it's that is what has destroyed it.
Right.
That argument left the campaign because of
what... Well, Paul Krugman kept saying right through early 08 that this was the whole idea of... And Hillary Clinton had a public option in her plan. Edwards went first, and he got credit for being the guy who kind of was the trailblazer among the three. But I believe they all had a public option in their plan. This was the way it was being discussed through early 08. And since then, that discussion has gone away. I've never seen anyone explain why it went away.
We have to wrap up, I'm being told. Bob Schoenberg, good to have you here. Thank you so much. From the Daily Howler, he'll be back again very soon to talk about politics and life in our society. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producer is Justin Levy. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, and Christina Arison. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows and hear additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.